My name is Maya Rolbengani, and I've sort of been involved with the Dominion for a few years now, and I work for the 2110 Center for Gender Advocacy at the moment, and there's some material on the shelf over there if anyone's interested. And within that, I do a lot of work on a campaign called Missing Justice, which is particularly focused on violence against Indigenous women in Canada, and more particularly on missing and murdered Native women. So I've done a lot of work around that, and I've also been involved sort of on and off intermittently when I can be with Climate Justice Montreal. And the reason I mentioned those last two specifically is because they're sort of, my involvement with Missing Justice and my involvement with Climate Justice Montreal are sort of the two main factors that have contributed to my understanding of the connection between gender and climate change over the last year or so. Through those involvements, it's become increasingly clear to me that oppression based on gender roles, both in past, we're talking historically, early colonization, as well as now, from then on, basically, has really played an integral role in facilitating the sort of capitalist patterns of accumulation and exploitation that we're now seeing, that we experience on a day-to-day basis, and which in turn facilitates or sort of necessitates land theft on a large scale and resource theft from Indigenous communities, for example, in Canada. The same can be said about most parts of the world as well, but I'll focus on Canada. It's been pretty clear to me from talking to lots of people just in Montreal that the link is not clear. It's pretty easy to walk around Montreal in 2011 and be like, not really understand the link between words like gender and climate change, or concepts like gender oppression and climate justice, for example. But one of the things that I think is the most important about the work that Climate Justice Montreal does, that I really appreciate about the group and its work, is that, for example, the reason that the term climate justice is used as opposed to some other term is because the group has really sought to draw the links between fighting against climate change, fighting for the environment, the environment's rights, and social justice. Because as we see it, there's always fights for the climate are always social justice issues. And you can't really separate the two. People, as I see it, people are actually part of the climate. You can't really extract people from the climate that they live in. So you're actually defending those rights at the same time. And so Climate Justice Montreal has sought to draw the links between climate justice, between gender rights, fights for gender rights, migrant justice, First Nations autonomy and self-determination, you name it. Basically, it's connected. And I think it's really important to note that, because I mean, there are a lot of struggles out there that I've come across, a lot of fights, a lot of groups, collectives that tend to just sort of focus on one thing, divide the issues up, and sort of use the excuse that, let's focus on what's more urgent right now, saving the climate, and let's deal with the issue of gender, which is more deep-seated and harder to get at later on once we save the climate. Let's not worry about dealing with all this First Nations stuff. Like, we really, the climate is obviously more urgent. This is just an example, but the way I see it, and I think the way a lot of people here see it, and I think the way it's important to see it, is that if you have a struggle that does that, that sort of divides the different aspects of the fight up, then it's bound to A, have a huge blind spot, B, be way less effective, in my opinion, and C, risk just replicating or preserving the screwed up power structures that already exist that we should be sort of trying to replace. And that's part of what actually attaining climate justice would look like, would be, actually attaining, a different power structure, actually attaining social justice. Without those things, it wouldn't be possible. just to not go on forever, because I really could, I think just to give more a couple more specific examples of the angle I've been coming at it from, because gender is huge, and climate justice is huge, but in the work that I've done with Missing Justice, it's become pretty clear to me that violence against Native women in Canada is now and has been for, you know, since early colonizers arrived in Canada, deeply connected to colonizers' desire to steal land and resources. You can look, I mean, you can, someone that I really admire and respect, a woman named Beverly Jacobs, who's a Mohawk woman, used to work for the Native Women's Association of Canada, pointed out to me a while back, started telling stories of her own family and history, talked about how early settlers arrived in her community and sort of noted that women had a huge position of power in the community, didn't understand why so much power was deferred to the grandmothers, these old ladies, didn't really get it, knew that they had to sort of somehow undermine that in order to steal land and resources, and they had to undermine the entire sort of way the society was set up. I can look at a number of things historically, a number of mechanisms that were used to do that. You can look at the Indian Act, which had like explicitly built-in sexist components to it, which, you know, stipulated for a long time that you know, any Native woman that married outside of her community automatically lost her quote Indian status. But whereas that was not the case for men, they actually endowed anyone they married that was non-Native with Indian status. You can look at residential schools, which also sort of not only just the insane levels of the legacy of sexual abuse that people are still suffering from today, like intergenerationally and so on, that have been problems that have been passed on, but also just the fact that residential schools really, really reinforced certain gender roles that European settlers wanted to sort of drum into people in order to, you know, kill the Indianness in their communities, among other reasons. You can look at today, the tar sands, for example, and like really, really heightened levels of sexual and physical violence towards women and women-identified people, whether Native or not, within close proximity to extractive industries. This is pretty true around Canada and around the world. And you can also look at the fact that there is an alarmingly high level of murdered and missing Indigenous women, more likely than anyone else in the country to go missing or be murdered, and that you could probably see society's attitude toward that, and as legitimating land theft continually still today, and that whether that's conscious or not, there are just certain stereotypes that society perpetuates around the violence and around Native women in particular. And just really briefly, I'll also say that you can also look to the history of European women and white European women, and see that the patterns that exist today also go back to you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago. If you look at the witch trials, for example, in the 16th and 17th century, most of the women that, like, there were, I don't know, I think something like 40,000 at least women targeted and brutally murdered, and mainly the women that were targeted were seen as sort of activists of the day. A lot of them were fighting against privatization of communally owned lands, and so we're basically fighting for the use of land for growing food, against sort of more industrial capitalist uses of the land, and they also were targeted, women were targeted for having more reproductive knowledge, more knowledge of midwifery and natural modes of contraception and so on. And you can also, I think, today still see the traces of that in sort of societal values and knowledge of birth control, for example. So anyway, all this to say, I think I could, this is not a topic, an easy topic to talk about for 5 minutes, but all this to say that I think that in our struggles, in our fights, in the sort of things that we get involved in the projects. I think it's really important to not leave out a gender analysis, to not sort of separate the different fights up and say that they're different or should be dealt with one at a time. And the same can be said for gender, for First Nations rights, for the rights of people of any gender, migrant justice, and so on. I think we really need to deal with things more on a human level if we want to be really effective and if we actually want to save the climate. So I'll stop there.